7:04 on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today, we are in hour two of the program. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at your local liquor store, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio, Kintec Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, that's what you're waiting for. It's time now for AJ from AJ's Pizza on East Broadway. Try AJ's traditional New York pizza or sink into their famous Detroit pizza known as the Ronnie by Andy. Only at AJ's Pizza. Order online at AJ's.pizza. AJ joins us now on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, AJ? Good morning.
What's going on? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Big weekend ahead.
Huge weekend. Now, I know normally we spend this time talking beer and pizza and promoing, but you did want to carve out a moment to talk about Bob Cool.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, it's people like Bob are unbelievable, you know? I mean, he's the Vince Scully of hockey, right? And somehow you start to, and then you go look back and remember moments, and I remember and I'm sure we've all done this over the last 24 hours, but I remember that Mario breakaway. Mm. And I remember where I was, and it kind of ties it all together. People like him, just, yeah, it's amazing. What a talent.
We were texting back and forth last night. The Vin Scully of hockey is a perfect way to put it, too. Yeah, it's pretty cool. We're going to have John Shorthouse, by the way, everybody, on the show at 7:30 to continue this conversation, talking about his memories of Bob Cole and the influence he had on his career. Real quick, AJ, so this weekend, big weekend of sports. There's tons going on. You got a Canucks game tonight, Canucks game Sunday, and we're going to be hanging out on Sunday at the Hollywood Theater for a watch party, too, which should be pretty cool.
We are. We'll be bringing pizzas. You'll be able to buy slices. And, let's get a Canuck win here.
Yeah, beautiful.
Today and Sunday.
And a reminder, it is happy hour all day on Sunday at AJ's as well. Check him out this weekend. AJ, thanks for doing this, bud. We'll see you Sunday.
Yeah, thank you. Take care, guys.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. That's AJ from AJ's Pizza on East Broadway. If you want to head there this weekend, I mean, God, I'm trying to think of a better time to sit around and drink beer and eat pizza. There's so much sports on.
Yeah,
much sports.
And you don't even have weather guilt.
No.
It's been raining so much.
And that's a great part of this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it sucks for people.
Be out there running and exercising, but
it's true. I'm increasing my own sense of self-worth. But instead, I'm going to be slovenly and sit inside the entire time. Speaking of sitting inside, Sunday, watch party, Halford and Bruff. So here's the thing. It's starting to catch on a little bit. Even though we tried to be like too cool for school and, you know, play hard to get, you can show up if you want. You don't have to.
No big deal.
There are tickets. I need to make this abundantly clear to everybody that in the event that this thing goes loco, and because it is Fiesta Friday, and a lot of people show up.
It's like a high school party. It just goes crazy.
Yeah, Project X, Halford and Bruff style.
Our parents will not be there.
That's right.
Somebody's going to call the cops on us.
They have locked the liquor cabinet. That is going to be a problem. We'll work our way around it. Anyway, if it becomes where there's a lot of people and they have to start doing a lineup and they have to start doing the door, I want to make this abundantly clear. People holding tickets will get priority to enter. If you want tickets, they're free. No obligation, no cost, free. F-R-E-E. Go to hollywoodtheater.ca. You can go. You can sign up.
We just need your credit card number. There's no big deal. I'll just buy some stuff.
Right. And all of your personal information.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's totally free. Go to hollywoodtheater.ca. It's a show pass link. You can get tickets. 2:00 Sunday, Hollywood Theater, Game 4, Canucks Preds. It'll be the Halford and Bruff Show watch party. There's lots of different links on social. You can find your way there.
And it sounds like you'll be wanting those tickets. Scuttlebutt is reporting.
A-Dog put it on Reddit, and that just really blew it up.
Yeah. We're getting some numbers, so get a ticket.
Yeah, okay, sounds good. Let's go to the phone lines now. Our next guest is now a weekly NHL playoff insider here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Sportsnet's very own Luke Gazdick here on the Halford and Bruff Show. Good morning, Luke. How are you?
Good, guys. Did you leave me a ticket for Sunday?
No, you're guest listed. VIP, front of the line.
Side door. Meet me at the side door, and $5, please.
Yeah, it'll be like that scene.
I got to get myself a flight out to Van at some point.
It'll be like that scene from Goodfellas where they walk him in through the side, you know?
Yeah.
That'll be
hey,
you.
Hey, speaking of that, too, I just said Van. I said that on air one night when we were doing a regional, and Canucks Twitter came at me. Is it, you guys not say van? You don't refer to Vancouver
really.
As van? That's, is that a bad thing? I said it on air, and my goodness, I got an earful for it.
You've learned a valuable lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Van is referred exclusively to the vehicle, not the city.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Lesson learned.
Lesson learned. I want to, before we get into the Canucks stuff, I do want to ask you real quick. Two teams fell behind 3-0 last night. The Tampa Bay Lightning fell behind 0-3 in their series against the Florida Panthers. The Islanders did the same in their series against Carolina. If one of these two teams is to stage a miracle comeback, who's more likely for it?
Oh, it's got to be the Lightning. I mean, if you have, if you've followed the Carolina Islanders series, it's been tilted the entire time. I mean, the Isles have had a couple moments where they've looked okay, but Carolina is just too much for them. The way they play is just swarming you and shot attempts, and they have some skill. They can finish. Like, that's a really good hockey team. I have them coming out of the East. I just don't think the Isles have any chance. Tampa is probably the one that I would say could make a comeback, but I mean, I just don't see it happening anyway. I really just didn't see this coming. It's probably the one I was most surprised at so far in the playoffs. Even last night, even they kept going down in the game, and I was just thinking, there's no way they lose this game. They're going to come back. There's no way they go down 3-0, especially on home ice. And you know, that's another good hockey team across from them in Florida. So I'll probably give it to Tampa, but I mean, I don't see it realistically happening.
How do the Lightning and the Islanders, assuming they don't win these series and come back, how do they improve this offseason?
Tampa's going to be an interesting one, and the Steven Stamkos ordeal that is surely set to happen here is going to be interesting to watch how it plays out. It's almost like they've saved him for last. Other guys have gotten contracts ahead of him. He is that organization for me. We talk about dynasties, and you know, whether Tampa's kind of run as a dynasty is over, if he leaves, that's kind of the moving forward step for me. A lot of that core group is gone already. You still have Cooch and Point and Hedman and Vassie there, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how they go moving forward. They have no draft capital, right? So they're not going to get better through the draft. They're going to have to be pretty crafty in free agency. But I just don't know. It's a team that I'm you know, very kind of excited to see what they do going forward, and if Stammer ends up staying or leaving there. The Isles, I don't think they change much. I think Lou's going to be stubborn there, just because I think he wants a full year with Patrick Waugh and going into training camp, and he'll be able to kind of set up his foundation more of how he wants them to play. A lot of guys there are sticking around on contracts. I just don't see a ton changing on the aisle. I think they're going to kind of give Patty his, you know, the keys to the car and just let him, you know, let him do what he wants to do coaching-wise and see if that makes a difference with that roster.
Let's talk about the Canucks now. I'm sure you watched Game 2 where they had approximately 9,000 shot attempts and hit the net about 14 times. How do you deal with a team like Nashville that just gets in shooting lanes, gets in passing lanes? Rick Tocchet said yesterday, we're just going to tee it up, and if it happens to hit those guys, we'll hopefully hit them pretty hard.
Which I respected.
I don't know if that's going to work, but how do you beat a team that's blocking shots like Nashville is?
I'm not going to lie, it's not easy. And I don't know if Juice would like me saying this, but Bieksa was saying the same stuff in the studio. He said, if they're going to get in lanes, I'm going to absolutely tee it up. One-timers, full clappers, and it's kind of that old-school mentality that talk followed with there. But it's really tough, to be honest. It's going to take some craftiness out of their defense core, first and foremost. I think Quinn Hughes is going to be a huge part of this about getting shots through. He's one of the best in the league at it, walking lines, finding holes, finding gaps. But, man, they had 30 blocks. I mean, Carrier led the way with 6 of them. They got guys like McDonough and Sissons on the, you know, on the front end and the back end that aren't afraid. I don't want to say it's fun to watch, but it's admirable for sure, watching guys go down and taking these shots. But I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of on the side with Talk and with Bieksa, is like, if they want to get in these lanes, like, we got to be absolutely firing it, absolutely hammering it. But I don't think you change too much shot attempt-wise. I don't want to say they can't do this every game, but it'll be challenging to do that every night. Like, the ice bags will start to pile up. The injuries will start to pile up. Just continually get shot attempts there. I think that's probably the goal first and foremost. But I think it starts from the point. I think their D got to do a lot better job of getting shots through and just get bodies and traffic in front. Get a little greasy, and hopefully some will bounce in that way.
I mean, Talk had spoken quite a bit about the will of both teams and one team's will being stronger than the other. And I get that, right? That's, and part of this is just you're not going to break down X's and O's with the media, so you kind of give these very nebulous terms. But how much of it at the end of the day does come down to, well, boys, we just need to want it more? And how does that resonate with the players? Because, you know, part of the coach is to do tactical stuff, not just give them the rah-rah speech.
Yeah, his job is a large part in motivation, right? And motivating your guys and getting them ready. But when it comes down to it, he can't control the way guys play. He can't throw the skates on and get inside guys' body.
Right.
This is all puck battles and all just, that is will. That is going into a corner and knowing you're going to come out with the puck, getting inside their D and just winning those small battles all over the ice because they add up. And I mean, I like the will of both teams too. I think this is, we talked a lot before the playoffs about the lack of experience that Vancouver had in it. And they're getting a lesson in real time now of the pace and the will you need in playoff hockey to win. And they're learning on the fly, but it's got to be every game, you know, learning those lessons and picking them up. Now you get to go on the road and play it in front of a really loud, rambunctious crowd down in Nashville, and they should be feeding off that. Like, me as a player, that's the way I was. Like, it didn't matter if it was home or away. I loved loud crowds. And not every single player is like that. Some might find it a little bit intimidating, but for the most part, guys love playing in front of those atmospheres and in those atmospheres. And they just got to find it. They got to find it. They got to be a little harder. You know, I know there's one guy that you guys have been focused on a lot that probably needs to be a little harder, but I think it's an all through the lineup thing, just about bearing down and winning some more of these one-on-one battles.
Well, let's talk about Elias Pettersson. On the bright side, he was very involved in game two. On the other side, every decision he seemed to make when the puck was on his stick was the wrong one. What does Pettersson need to do to get out of this funk?
That's a good question. We got a similar situation over here in Toronto, right? Mitch Marner's taking a lot of the heat. Power play's over. Your guys' power play out there is over. I feel like Elias is taking the brunt of it, but I went back and watched his shifts, and he's just got to do a little more. And whether that's engagement, whether that's mentally, I don't know how you reset in such a short amount of time. Maybe getting away from home ice will be a good thing for him. The body language is probably the only thing that's concerning about his game for me. You see that a decent amount throughout the league with some younger players, and I know he's not that young, but just some of the body language when things aren't going his way, when a play isn't made. Even that one on the third goal where he turns it over at the blue line and then, you know, he takes a second to kind of feel sorry for himself and then driver beats him to the net. It's just little things like that about just being able to reset, take those bad plays out of your mind and get back into it. But, you know, he's just honestly as simple as it can be. He's got to be better. If they want to have any success, I just feel like he's such a huge part of it. And whether it's teammates, whether it's coaches, just giving him a tap, keeping him positive, that's what you got to do because he's just such a big part of this team and a big part of this offense.
We're speaking to Sportsnet NHL analyst Luke Gazdick here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. From the other side of things, Luke, what have you seen from Nashville through the first two games that stood out to you?
They're just opportunistic, and that's kind of what they've been all year. They didn't even need that many shots past the Smith. It's when they get these, you give them little opportunities, and they'll bury. They'll finish. They have the skill. I think that's one thing that goes overlooked with their lineup is when you look at it from top to bottom, maybe you don't even recognize some of the names, but there's some really good players throughout that lineup. I think Philip Forsberg is one of the ones that comes to mind instantly all year. Very quiet, 40 goals, but you saw on his goal, you know, sick little move in front, goes short side on dismiss, but that's just caused by a turnover. If Van wants to turn over pucks like they did, sorry, if Vancouver wants to turn over pucks like they did, Nashville's going to bury. And they play hard defensively. Like, Ryan O'Reilly sets the tone there, I feel like. And then a guy like Colton Sissons, BC boy, he's right behind in that category. And we just talked about the blocks. They still have the horses on the back end in McDonough and Yossi and Carrier that will do anything to get in front of these shots. But you just can't give them anything. I thought Vancouver gave them all their opportunities. They didn't really even earn them. But if you're going to do that, they're a team that can make you pay. And I think it's just about cleaning up some of your game and being a little smarter.
One of the things that Rick Tocchet, just getting back to Elias Pettersson, said about Pettersson was he should try to embrace all this and have fun with it. Sometimes when we all watch Pettersson, we wonder if, you know, he's having any fun at all. You mentioned his body language, and I get that it must be incredibly frustrating to struggle in your game, especially with all the pressure that's put on him. And I know he puts a lot of pressure on himself, but there must be a time when you also have to say to yourself, like, this is where I've dreamed of being, in the playoffs, playing these big games and being a big part of them. Is it easier said than done to go out and tell a guy to just go and have fun?
That's the first thing I was thinking when I heard talk and when I kind of heard you expand on that about, you know, just have fun. Because when you make a play like that where 18,000 are watching you and then they show it on replay and it's on the highlights the next day, that's where my mind went to when I made mistakes. It was something that I had a real problem with even throughout, towards the end of my career, even when I matured and when I got older. I had a hard time making a mistake like that on the ice, or, you know, eating a minus that was partially my fault and putting that aside and just being able to hop back over the boards and, you know, shake it off. I had a really hard time with that. Some guys were different than others. I played with guys who could easily just brush that off and say, hey, it's all good, let's go out there and get the next one. And I had a tendency to sit on it. So I understand what he's going through. But at the same time, like, he just means so much to them that there can't be any of that with him. This is exactly what you talked about. This is the opportunity that he's been waiting for, is to play Canucks hockey in the playoffs and maybe not be the guy, but be one of the guys for the Canucks that helps lead them in a run here. But it is certainly more easier said than done to just have fun and soak it in when there's just so much pressure and there's you're under such a microscope. Everyone's watching every single move you make, and it can be challenging. So I honestly feel for him in some ways like that. But at the end of the day, he's got to get through that, because he's just he's one of the most important guys they have.
If you were in charge of a hockey team, either a general manager, a president, or even the head coach, would you encourage your young players to stay off social media?
That's a great question. And it's interesting looking at the way it's handled and treated now than when I was in the league. Twitter was certainly, I'll say Twitter's the biggest one, so I'll say that, or X, whatever you want to call it. It wasn't huge when I was playing. The guys that were on it, it was still, I don't want to say fairly new, but reporters were just starting to use it, and a lot of highlights, you know, people were starting to run their news and their highlights on it. So it wasn't a huge part of our game, and I thought it was crazy when guys went on back then. So I would agree, and I would say yes, I would be shutting those things down in the playoffs. The more you read about yourself, the more you see about yourself, can only really be detrimental. I hope a guy like Petey's not, you know, cruising X and searching his own name, because that is an absolute nightmare. But I know players do. Like, I know, well, for example, yeah, I know a couple Oiler guys that are still kind of cruise around and read articles and stuff like that. I would stay off it as much as possible. I wouldn't, you know, force it or make any rules, but I would highly encourage you to stay away from it, because I just think it's only, it can only be bad. Even if you're playing well, if you're playing good, if you're playing bad, I don't see any value in cruising the web and going through your socials in such a, you know, in a time like this.
Couldn't agree more. Luke, thanks for this, bud. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend and all the games. We'll do this again next Friday.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you.
Yep, talk to you later. That's Luke Gazdick, former NHLer, now a Sportsnet NHL analyst here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
I thought he was going to give us some Oilers names there.
I got very excited for a moment. I was like, oh, who is it? He names names.
Luke knows what anecdotes can go on the air and what ones can't.
Yeah, you can tell he's just like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. You know, I know we're up against it for time, but that would probably be my first bit of advice for new players entering the league. Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't need to be on there.
Would you do it yourself, though? It'd be pretty tempting, wouldn't it? Search your last name even after a bad game.
I wonder whether
they're being very encouraging.
I'd say, son, we've given you a very large sum of money to play hockey for us. If you want to use these channels to promote your brand and everything else, then you hire someone to do that for you, and you hire someone to handle all that for you with the money that we gave you, that nice little signing bonus and all that. That's, you're going to take a chunk of that money and you're going to hire someone to do that for you. And I would bang my hand on the desk as I was saying it. That would be my advice to them. Okay, a lot more to get into on the program. What are you laughing at?
You're becoming the dictator? You've become a real hand banger.
Yeah. What? Wait, what?
Whoa.
What was that?
I picked that up a lot. I've been good at that for a long time. Not just now. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. John Shorthouse. Very good timing on your drops today.
Thank you. You've
had stuff at the ready. You're really sharp today, laddie.
I'm on my game. It's a playoff game day.
So it's true. It's true. Okay.
You can tell he's serious when he starts the handbang.
Did you see I've got a playoff mustache?
Yeah, I noticed that.
Is that what that is?
I switched it up.
I wasn't sure what was going on.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a mustache.
Playoff mustache.
For the record, there's not going to be any of these cheap jokes about you grow facial hair quite well, I would say, actually. Mm-hmm. It's not a challenge for you. You had a John Cleese-esque mustache hair for a while.
Yeah.
And now it's coming back with a... So are you just going to grow a mustache or the whole...
It's just the mustache. Nice. We need to switch it up. I mean, I started growing a beard, a playoff beard, and then Demko got hurt, and then the Canucks lost game two, and
now it's a stash.
Now it's a mustache.
I'm doing a playoff beard with no mustache. It'll look absolutely terrifying. I'll be on a few lists by the end of it.
Oh, man.
A few more lists.
Yeah. Okay. We got
the hell is that guy?
Shorty's coming up next.
Before I say something that's going to get us even more trouble.
No more handbanging.
John Shorthouse joining us next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What are you laughing at?
You're becoming the dictator? You've become a real handbanger.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd.
And Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
.33 on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650.
God, I love Fiesta Friday.
I do love a good Fiesta Friday.
This makes me feel so good.
This is how on his game Laddie is right now. Even though John Shorthouse is about to join us and he has his own intro music, Laddie was determined, I repeat determined, to stick with the Fiesta Friday theme.
I think Shorty's got a bit of a festive vibe to him, right?
Shorty loves a Fiesta.
Probably having a good time in Nashville right now. Maybe he'll go for tacos.
Yeah, right now. Like 9:30 in the morning.
It's true. Morning tacos. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. I've already mentioned that. Hour two of this program is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. What better way to celebrate your Fiesta Friday than with some low-calorie, low-carb craft beer? You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made. Our next guest, as mentioned, is joining us live from Nashville, the play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet, John Shorthouse, here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Shorty?
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. Fiesta Friday it is. I concur with Laddie. I think that was the way to go.
Good. We played some Bob Cole audio over a Fiesta track earlier in the show, and then we were kind of self-reflective about it, and then we're like, you know what? Part of this is about celebrating an iconic career, all the tremendous calls that he had, and remembering what he meant to so many people in a positive way. With regards to your career, what sort of influence did Bob Cole have on John Shorthouse?
Well, I'm with you on that, by the way, because I think Bob would prefer us to raise a glass of Captain Morgan and salute him rather than be overly despondent today, despite the fact that, you know, it is a sad day because he was an influence on so many of us. And I'm no different. I think the coolest thing for me as a kid was when Jim Robson would call a game on a Saturday because that was our guy. And to me, it just meant so much. And for those of you who are younger than, let's say, Jason, Saturdays, there used to be one game. And it was at 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern. And the Canucks were seldom the featured team. It was usually Danny Gallagher in Montreal, sometimes Jim Robson in Vancouver, and often Bob Cole in Toronto. And you got one game a week on Saturday. And Bob, I grew to like Bob back in the 80s as the voice of the Leafs because I could never warm up to Montreal. I was just sick of all the winning. You know, like,
fair.
I was born in 1970. And so when I was really starting to pay attention to the league, Montreal was in the process of winning 4 straight cups in the late 70s. And I just, enough. Like, okay, you've had your winning. I'm bored with you. So I kind of glommed on to the Leafs on Saturdays because the Canucks weren't very often the featured team. And that was kind of my introduction to Bob. And then, of course, he became the voice, not just of Saturdays, but of playoffs, Olympics, World Cups, you name it. And, you know, he's just the soundtrack of so many things for so many of us. So I got this job 26 years ago. I started calling Canucks games in 1998. And I think the first time we worked the same game was a Saturday in 1999 in Calgary. And I don't think I'd met Bob before. We might have rubbed shoulders briefly in 94 when the Canucks were in the final and I was covering it for Sports Page. And he was calling it on CBC. But I hadn't really had an introduction to him. So I was excited. We were going to be in the same broadcast gondola at the Saddle Dome in Calgary, calling the same game on a Saturday. I was on the radio for CKNW and he was on TV for Hockey Night in Canada. And I was sitting in the booth with John Bruins, the longtime radio engineer in Calgary, who's still doing the job. And I wasn't paying attention to what was going on behind me. And John kind of tapped me on the shoulder. And I turned around, and there was Bob in the doorway. And he'd come to talk to me, let alone me going to talk to him. And I turned around and said, "Mr. Cole, it's nice to meet you." And all he said, two words. And he said, "Chubarov or Chubarov?" So I said, it's Chubarov, Bob. It's so exciting to me. And we had a little chat after that. But that was my introduction to him. He was a stickler for detail. In the mornings, he always, the first thing you wanted to know was, what are the lines? You know, he'd ask the coaches. And we've reached a stage now where coaches don't divulge much, but they'd always divulge it for Bob. Always divulged it to Bob because of the respect they had, because they grew up listening to him as well. And so he wanted the lines, and on that particular night, he wanted to know how to pronounce the name of number 13 for Vancouver, and it was, in fact, Artem Chubarov.
So I know you've been doing the job for a long time, and you've developed your own style and some of your own calls and catchphrases. Catchphrases is interesting because sometimes you can hear guys trying too hard or thinking too much. And we were talking earlier, part of Bob Cole's brilliance was the simplicity and the way that he was able to enunciate just regular stuff and make it sound like very melodic. We're really getting into like the nitty gritty of play by play there. Is that ever something like, you know, did you ever like Bob Cole it up or anything like that?
I do. For those who pay close attention, I pay homage to Bob at least once again. And that's when there's a potential for an odd man rush. And it'll be three of them through center, or four of them this time. And that's a direct homage to Bob. And I've been doing that for decades. I've been told repeatedly that my best ever work was performed in the Sedin's final home game when Daniel scored in overtime against the Arizona Coyotes. And apparently my best work, and this is borrowing from Bob again, my best work involved me shutting up and not saying a word for 8 straight minutes because there was no point, right? I said scores, and then we didn't talk for I think it was 8 minutes. And the crowd took it from there. And it was the only way to go. And some people would have talked right through that. And Bob wouldn't have, and nor should he have. And we didn't, and nor should we have. So he's been an influence in a lot of ways. And then, you know, so every game I try to pay tribute to him one way or another. And in 2019, we were told that it was going to be his last night working. And the Canucks finished their season. They were out of the playoffs, and we had an afternoon game in St. Louis. And so we actually preceded the Hockey Night broadcast. And I had a small list of things that I wanted. I was only going to get one in. So I needed the opportunity to arise for me to pay homage to Bob. And the list of things didn't happen until Tanner Pearson had a rush through center, kind of a solo pass, and my opportunity was there. And so I borrowed a phrase from Bob, which I think you guys played earlier on the show, from 1992 when the Penguins beat the North Stars in the final, and it worked out pretty well. I remember I felt pretty good because Ron McLean replayed it on the pregame show on Hockey Night, and it was a small gesture, but it was fitting, I thought, for my end.
Well, I actually have both calls here, Shorty, if we can play them just for a second. We'll start with the Lemieux call that you were referencing that we played earlier.
Laddie, yes, I don't care what people say about you.
Coming up. Look at Lemieux. Oh, my heavens. What a goal. What a move. Lemieux. Oh, baby.
And then here's your wonderful tribute that you did on that night you're talking about.
45 seconds for the second unit to work with. Here's Pearson through the defense. In. Scores. Tanner Pearson. What a move. What a goal! Oh, baby!
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Tanner Pearson and Mario were often compared.
Yeah, seriously. I thought that's where the worlds also collided, you know, because there was such a similarity in their play.
We're speaking to John Shorthouse live from Nashville here on the Halford and Brush Show on Sportsnet 650. Laddie, you're the best. Shorty, so in addition to everything that you do, you're now an embedded journalist working the scrums. You're like Moj. You're in there asking questions.
I heard your voice yesterday in the scrum, and I couldn't believe it.
I usually go in the scrum just so I can be seen, and they'll be like, oh yeah, Shorty was here this morning.
Check. And Shorty was in the skate.
He's working his ass off. I was curious, particularly with Casey, if that's what you're referring to. I was curious if, like, in the moment, if he was hearing the fans. Because, and I heard Batch's call too. We had basically the exact same call. It was like, the fans are chanting, let's go Casey. And the chant didn't work.
What did Casey say? I didn't hear that part of the scrum with you. I heard you when you were asking Tockett.
He said he could hear it. He said he could hear it clear as day. Like, he knew exactly what was going on. And I think what happened, if you go back and look, because it seemed so far out of position. Like, he was trying to stop a shot that was going 3 feet wide. But I think he lost an edge.
Mm-hmm.
I think he pushed left, and then he went to push back right, and it didn't happen. And that's why he wound up so far to the left and out of the crease. But anyway, you know, he said he knew exactly what the fans were chanting. And, I think it was a pretty special moment. Just like JT said earlier in the season, and like Connor Garland said a couple of weeks ago when the fans were chanting his name as well.
So speaking of like fan excitement and energy in the building and everything, this is the great thing about the playoffs is because, you know, you get your games in Vancouver, 9 years of pent up, whatever, exploding in games one and games two. And then you go to Nashville where it's going to be very loud and raucous. Set the scene for us here, Shorty. I know you've been in town for a couple days and I know they've been in practice at the arena and they've got the smash car outside and everything else. Set the scene for the listeners as we get ready for game three in Nashville.
Well, the Predators have just taken the ice. So I'm standing in Ridgestone Arena in the entrance to Section 114, which is just below the pole, which you remember used to be like a Gillette foamy pole, I think. Now it's for Vanderbilt Health.
We don't need the scene set this much.
No, this is good.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a wordsmith. I see Darren Pang from TNT walking in. Jeff Patterson's here representing Rickwide. I see Noah from the Daily Hodge. I see two reporters from The Athletic, Armin Dial and Thomas Grant.
Okay, now let the crowd do it.
And now a layout. That's what we call it in the industry, layout. Look, there's a good buzz here. But there's a buzz because it's Nashville. There's so much going on. Tim McGraw was here last night. The Nashville Marathon goes on the weekend. I think Morgan Wallen's playing three shows here next week. So hotels are at a premium. And if you haven't been to Nashville lately, hotels is the key word. This place has exploded.
Yeah.
Like, it is like the new Vegas. And being treated as such. Like, a lot of bachelorette parties, stags, it's become kind of the new Vegas. And to be here for a playoff series, the buzz is pretty positive.
What do the Canucks have to do tonight to get the win?
Score more than the Predators, Jason.
Yeah. That's why you're the best, buddy.
That's why you're the best.
What have you seen? Have you seen in terms of them just struggling to get their shots through? Does Shorty have any ideas?
Well, Dave does. You know, he's more of the X's and O's guys than I am. But it's almost like they have to front the front. You know, and one of the questions I asked in the scrum with Rick yesterday was, you know, the Suter goal in game one, is that kind of the blueprint? Because they were stacked. Suter was the high man. There was another Canuck behind him. I think it was Miller. And he shoots, and it's the high man who gets the tip because he's in front of the defender. And I don't know, like, as I'm not a hockey guy in that sense, I don't know specifically what the strategy would be to recreate that on, you know, a regular basis. But I think, like Rick said yesterday in answering Ian McIntyre's question, it's a will thing. Like, they need to battle for their position. And, you know, the Nashville players may want to front them and get to the puck before it gets to the Canucks or the goaltender. But the Canucks have a say in that, right? They can determine the outcome of that battle by out-battling the Nashville defender.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I think that's, you know, Rick Tocchet's a cerebral guy. Don't get me wrong. But he's also an old school guy. And, you know, it's the time of year where it is oftentimes a battle of wills. And who wants it more? And if the Canucks want to score goals or at least test UC Saros with their shots, they need to win that space. They need to want it more than the guy defending it. And I think that that's what you can look for tonight. And I'm curious to see as well, with that in mind, Lindholm on the power play, because the power play has gone dry again. Not just the first few games of this series, but it was a little quiet the end of the season. So Lindholm replacing Garland, that's what it looks like on the power play. I'll be curious to see how that pans out.
Game three tonight. Actually, these are both afternoon affairs in my estimation. Game three this afternoon at 4:30. Game four Sunday afternoon at 2:00. Shorty will be on the call for both. Shorty, thanks for doing this, bud. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your time in Nashville and have a good call tonight and Sunday.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks.
See you, Shorty.
John Shorthouse, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Did you ever see the speech that John Tortorella gave the Blue Jackets before they upset the Tampa Bay Lightning?
I have not.
When he went into their room and he said, forget the X's and O's. It's not about X's and O's. Mm-hmm. And he was just saying, like you just, you know, his message was kind of the same thing that Shorty was talking about. Like, you just have to fight. And, you know, one of the famous lines from the Tort speech was, you stand in there and you don't take a expletive backwards step.
Right.
And that's kind of what the Canucks may have to do in the offensive zone.
Here's my question.
You can't be floating around on the outside hoping for something to happen. You have to join the fight and battle for ice and battle for space. And if the Preds want to be in the shooting lanes, find a way to get them out of those shooting lanes.
Here's the thing with that,
though. Without getting called for interference.
Right. Or tripping. Yeah. No penalties. I understand that. And I get that. You know, the motivational stuff and, you know, the gladiator quotes and all that. It's great and it makes for great theater and it makes for great drama. But is Andrew Burnett not saying the exact same thing to the Nashville Predators players? I think yes. Like, there's no way that he's being certain, second in the will department tonight. We'll be fine. Like,
but certain coaches emphasize X's and O's more than others. And guys like Tortorella, even though they do have X's and O's, and, you know, they do have a game plan. They focus more on the just win your battles, guys. Just find a way.
But I get it. But the fire and brimstone stuff, it's important. It absolutely is. All the cliches hold true in the playoffs. Like, I'm not doubting that for a moment. At a certain point, it's, you know, sack up, whatever, and get going and beat the other person.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, one puck, two individuals. You be the one that comes out with it. I get all that, right? But
don't undersell that.
I'm not underselling.
Like, that's a huge part of hockey.
I'm not underselling it.
Yeah,
I think you might be missing the point. I'm not trying to diminish that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is it's very hard to be like, go outwill the other individual, because the other individual's saying the exact same thing.
Well, he may not be emphasizing it as much.
I think every coach is emphasizing it. It's playoff hockey. Like, come on. What do you think Andrew Burnett said to his guys to get them to lay in front of 40 shots?
No. I'm not saying Andrew Burnett isn't doing it. I'm just saying that there are some teams that some coaches that emphasize that more, and I think they get more out of their players by doing that, frankly.
Because I remember, it's funny, because
there are other players that are like, those coaches would have like a nickname like the professor or something like that. He outthinks, as opposed to, you know, he's more of like a brain over brawn guy.
Yep.
And there are some coaches, like, I don't think you can debate that Torts' teams, like, they play harder than others. They do.
Yep.
So you can say that, well, other coaches are telling them to play harder, but they don't always.
Right.
Like, Torts gets teams to play harder.
Mm-hmm. I'm more talking about the philosophical nature of a battle of wills, is what I'm saying.
Sure.
And I'm not saying it's good, bad, or otherwise, but you have to acknowledge that when you're talking about the serve and volley nature and the count, the punch counterpunch, right now going into game three, the narrative is clearly defined as the Canucks have to outwill what the Predators did in game two, which was show the bravery and the dedication and the buy-in to block 40 shots, right? And so that's where it becomes, can you outman, outmuscle, outwork, outdetermine the other team, right? And then if they do it successfully, what happens? It's Nashville's turn to be like, well, now we have to win the battle of wills.
So we got an Ask Us Anything into the Dunbar Lumber text line, and I don't have it right in front of me, so I'm going to paraphrase this. It was about hockey cliches, which ones you like and which ones you hate. One of the ones I like and I think is totally appropriate for the playoffs is you have to battle for every inch of the ice. It does change. There is a different feeling in the playoffs. And I think that's probably what Rick Tocchet is getting at. So the exchange yesterday that Shorty was talking about with IMAC, IMAC asked a question. I'm going to paraphrase this again. He said, is one way to disrupt the Preds when they're in the shooting lanes is to get there yourself and be in that spot as well, because you can move out of the way, right, at the last minute. So if you win that battle for that spot on the ice and you almost push your guy out of the shooting lane and then Tocchet looked over him and said, bingo.
Yeah.
And he was like, I think he made some comment. He's like, you should be a coach or something like that. And iMac was like, so proud of himself.
Yeah. Thank you, Rick.
So that's going to be interesting to watch. And I think that's one of the reasons that Lindholm is out there on the power play. And I think it'll be interesting to watch guys try and battle with the Preds for those shooting lanes. And don't just let them have that ice. Because sometimes it's tempting to let them have that ice. They're like, okay, you stand there. I'll go over here and try and, you know, get open for a pass or something. But in some ways, what Taka might be asking his guys to do is just be like, mix it up with those guys and get them out of the shooting lanes.
All playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Get your keys to an all-star collection of Kubota products at one of their six locations across BC this spring. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.